The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off this morning with, or this afternoon in the case of the recording, your true stories. Put me in, Coach. And there's a picture of a young kid, looks like he's probably about 6 or 7, with a football helmet, waving his arms in the air, and his readers share their sports stories from the highlights that won trophies into the bloopers that won hearts. Who's on first? Trying to keep my little leaguer settled in the dugout was quite the task. I explained that the next batter is called on deck. The batter after that is in the hole. If they weren't on deck or in the hole, they had to sit down. One player kept asking what the batter after the in the hole is called, and I kept saying there was no name for that. He called those batters in the way. It was so funny. That's what we called it for the rest of the season. A swing and a miss. I played on a softball team with many rookies who never played before. One of my teammates hit a hard line drive. As she rounded first, we hollered, "Go to third," and she just did, right across the pitcher's mound. A Hail Mary play. When no one else stepped up, my husband volunteered to coach our son's soccer team, despite having no knowledge of the sport. The boys went the entire season without scoring. Before the final game, one player told my husband, "At Sunday school this morning, I prayed to score a goal." That game, the team scored their first goal ever, but they still lost 2-1. That same player said after the game, "I guess I should have prayed to win." And with the assist, my daughter and a friend played on the high school basketball team. My daughter usually started while her friend spent more time on the bench. One night, they burst through our front door. My daughter yelled, "I scored 20 points, and her friend yelled, "And I jumped up and down a lot." My husband explained to our hockey-playing son that sometimes referees ask, "Do you want this penalty or that one?" When the players simultaneously commit two violations that have equal time penalties, it's a way to point out that you saw both. The following week, our son was playing in a rough game and getting hit quite a bit. At one point, the referee asked, "Do you want the slash or the hook?" Frustrated, he replied, "Neither, since you missed the cross-check to my back." He got 5 minutes in the penalty box for that remark. Moral of the story, don't respond to a multiple-choice question with a fill-in-the-blank answer. Advice from the greats. My high school had a legendary basketball coach who retired just prior to my arrival. He still came to give us pep talks before a big game against the best team in the state. He told us, "Those boys put their britches on the same way you do." Inspired by his wisdom, we went out on the court and got beat like a drum. I saw the coach in the lobby after the game. He smiled and said, "I probably should have told you their britches were a lot bigger and moved a lot faster than yours." Stepping up to the plate. I coached my son's little league team. We lost every game until the last. In the final inning, we were in the field ahead by one with no outs and the bases loaded. The batter hit a line drive to our third baseman. She stuck out her glove with one hand and covered her eyes with the other. The ball landed in her glove. She jumped up and down, stomping on third base to make the second out. Then she stuck out her glove to show me the ball, tagging the runner coming in. An unassisted triple play. Our team ran to the pitcher's mound in celebration as if it were the World Series. First down and then some. My brother Nick was an excellent halfback, and my dad often volunteered to work the first down chains during his football games. Our team was down and the clock ticking when Nick got the handoff and broke free of the defense, charging downfield. Everyone was on their feet cheering. Caught up in the excitement, Dad ran down the sideline alongside Nick, holding the chain pole above his head. "Go, son, go!" The poor man on the other end of the chain just let go and started cheering too. Nick scored and ran to Dad for a big hug. The referee shook my dad's hand, took the chain, and politely told him his chain-holding days were over. My lucky strike. Years ago, I joined a bowling league. My score rarely broke 100, but one night I threw a ball that popped out of the gutter and knocked down all 10 pins. I was thrilled to have gotten a strike until my teammates told me it didn't count. When we had our awards dinner, I received an award for being the only person to ever get a gutter strike at the bowling alley. Even though it didn't count, I still had something no one else had. That was from Lisa Harris in Charlotte, North Carolina. Slightly off base. Before my 7-year-old daughter's softball season started, I told her I wanted to do two things, have fun and get one player out. As the season was ending, she'd had a blast, but she hadn't made an out. Finally, a ground ball was hit to her, and I yelled, "First base, first base." She stood and made the perfect throw to second base. When she got back to the dugout, I asked why she threw to second. She said, Dad, when I looked up and second base was the first base I saw. When the going gets tough. My daughter was very competitive growing up, but she was smaller than most kids, so I was always protective. Once during an intense basketball game against an aggressive team, she got hit in the face pretty hard with the ball. From the second row, I jumped up to help her. She saw and pointed, yelled, no bomb, and played on. That was the day I learned she'd be just fine. Blood, sweat, and veneers. When I coached high school tennis, there were never enough courts, so people were always waiting to play. One younger player passed time by tossing his racket back and forth from hand to hand. After some time, he asked for my help finding something, his tooth, which he knocked out when he hit himself in the face with the racket. Players from both squads were on their hands and knees searching for the grass. No luck. The player said, that's okay. It was artificial. I knocked that same tooth out last year. Heads-up play. The score was close, and the end of our volleyball game nearer. I dived for the ball, but pulled up when I saw another teammate already after it. She bumped it straight into the air. I leaped to my feet, but didn't know where the ball was. Suddenly the ball hit me. No joke. Square on top of the head. It arched up into a perfect set that another teammate spiked over the net. And we won the point and the game. Real true hitter. Have a good babysitting story? Teens just huddled their way through Saturday nights on $20, a delivery pizza, and a promise of a ride home the way they used to. Do you have a babysitting memory as a sitter or the sat that has stayed with you? Maybe your babysitter was a modern-day Mary Poppins or had a Daffy but dear Mrs. Doubtfire. Perhaps you took your eyes off the kids for one second to find they'd colored you lovely rainbow all over the living room wall. Quirky bedtime rituals, major mishaps, fond memories. We want to hear them all. See terms and share your stories at rd.com/babysitting. The healing power of water. This is the health section. It's not just our bodies that need the element of life. It's our minds, too. On a dusty August day in 2020, Wallace J. Nichols hiked into the California Valley where he had lived for more than 20 years to find his family home and all their possessions destroyed by a wildfire. Stunned, Nicholas searched the debris. He walked the entire property. Then he did the only thing he could think to do. He went down to the nearby creek, stripped off his clothes, and submerged himself. Nichols, who is a marine scientist, was seeking the healing power of water. It has been a rough few years. Many of us are finding ourselves exhausted, burned out, struggling to build balance back into our lives. We need to recharge. Water can help. Neuroscientists say that spending time near oceans, lakes, rivers, and other blue spaces can provide a range of benefits, including reducing anxiety, easing mental fatigue, and rejuvenating us. Participating in water activities such as swimming or surfing can help us enter a flow state, where we become fully immersed in what we're doing. This calms the mind, which is often absorbed by rumination and worry, says Ricardo Gil da Costa, a neuroscientist and chief executive of the neurotechnology company Neuroverse, who has studied how water affects our brain. Bodies of water can also produce a glorious sense of awe, the emotional response to something vast that expands and challenges we see in the world. Awe can decrease stress and help us put things into perspectives. Water naturally relaxes us and helps focus our thoughts, by taking away all the noise, says Nichols, whose work centers on how blue spaces affect our well-being. All we have to do is show up. Water has special properties that may boost nature's positive impact, environmental psychologists say. When you're near water, there is often less visual and auditory information to process. That means your mind can rest. The sound of water, typically steady and soft, soothes us. Its smell can provoke positive memories and associations. When we're floating in water, our bodies can rest, too, in a way we never can on land. Most important, water is dynamic. It moves rhythmically, producing a play of light, color, and sound that is mesmerizing. It holds our attention, but not in an over-demanding way. Researchers call this soft fascination. It gives our brains a break from the intense, focused, cognitively depleting attention that much of our daily life requires. Water helps your mind wander in a positive way, says Mark Berman, director of Environmental Neuroscience Laboratory at the University of Chicago. This is what is so restorative. Here's some advice on how to harness the healing power of water. Remember that all water counts. You likely have some close by, even if it's just a creek alongside the road. Start there. And I'm going to do something we're not supposed to do and editorialize a bit here. When I was in a very high-stress job, there was a creek not far from where I lived, and I would occasionally go there in the evenings and just sit by the creek and just let that sound as it poured over the stones soothe me. It was really great. Start there, then branch out to water you can visit on the weekend or a vacation. Urban water counts. Rivers, canals, and fountains. So does domestic water and pools, bathtubs, even sprinklers. Pay attention to the sound. Play off light of movement, says Nichols, author of The Blue Mind, which explores how water makes us happier and healthier. When you can't get to actual water, then paintings, photographs, and video movies can often produce some of the same benefits, he says. If you want to boost the positive effect, choose locations that represent positive memories for you. Even virtual reality helps. In research studies, computer-generated virtual reality water scenes boosted participants' moods, likely because they got to interact with the virtual environment. Go often. A little bit often makes a difference, big difference. A 2019 study found that it takes at least 2 hours a week in nature to improve our well-being, although that time can be broken into smaller stretches. A more recent, yet-to-be-published study found that spending a similar amount of time near water has the same benefits, says Matthew White, an environmental psychologist at the University of Vienna, who studies the health benefits of water environments and was a lead researcher on both studies. Scientists have also found that people who peered into aquariums had lower heart rate and better moods after just 15 minutes. Try a water sport and get good at it. This will help you experience a flow state where time and your worries fall away as you become fully engaged in what you are doing, says Gilda Costa. When you become proficient at an activity, your brain changes. It forms new neural pathways which become faster and stronger. This makes it even easier in the future to enter a state of flow while doing this same activity. Listen. It is no coincidence that many of the most popular soundscapes on the Calm app, such as Rain on Leaves, involve water. One of the most calming properties of water is its sound, White says. In a recent study, he and his colleagues found that the water sounds people find most restorative are rain in a rainforest, waves lapping on a beach, and a babbling brook. When researchers added biotic sounds from living beings to the water sounds, people liked them even more. Make an audio recording of your favorite water. It will trigger happy memories. You can spend time on the water anywhere, anytime in your mind. Visualize the sun sparkling on the surface or the sound of its waves splashing against the shore. And when the water you imagine is water you have enjoyed in real life, the positive effect will be even stronger, Nicholas says. When Nichols surfaced for air after submerging himself in the creek behind the ruins of a still smoldering home, he sobbed. Then he floated on his back until he felt calm. Since then, he has gone into the creek each day. It's like a daily reset, he says. I don't know how I would have gotten through all my feelings without it. Jitterbug. Perhaps the mark of a true rock star is having an insect named after you. Dizzy Bob Marley is a spider named in honor of the song High Tide or Low Tide by Bob Marley and the Wailers, because it lives in the intertidal zone. Cynonectris wallacei is a type of insect known as a treehopper that lives in southern Texas, where Selena was born. Agromyza princei is a fly first spotted on the leaf of a raspberry plant, named for Prince's song, Raspberry Beret. Petropella Mick Jaggery, Lacbacera Keith Richards, Electronica Ron Woody, Lagosopria Charlie Watts, El Branjosi, El Mickey Taylor, and Val Belly Wally are collectively referred to as the Rolling Stone Flies. A little inspiration. My lucky bamboo. If the plant could thrive, maybe I could too, even with cancer. My wife Hannah and I don't usually keep house plants. Anything in pots gets either overwatered or underwatered. But after my diagnosis with glioblastoma, a terminal brain cancer with a prognosis of little more than a year to live, I love the idea of having something new and green around. My friend Mitch gave me what he said was a lucky bamboo plant in a deep green pottery bowl with three pencil-sized stalks braided together. We placed the plant in the living room window across from the couch where I spent much of the day. I smiled when I looked at it over the rim of the mug of coffee Hannah brought me each morning. I told Hannah I wanted to care for the plant myself. When it didn't immediately turn yellow or brown or lose all its leaves, I was pleasantly surprised. Tending to the plant gave me a sense of accomplishment at a time when I sometimes felt useless. Glioblastoma limited my ability to walk, and the treatment left me fatigued, making it hard for me to accomplish everyday tasks. As a family physician, I was used to being the one who provided care, not the one who received it. Since my diagnosis in August 2018, Far too often, it seemed, I had to rely on help from other people. The enormous change left me feeling adrift and unsettled. Watering the plant, as small an act as it was, connected me to a core part of my old identity and taught me I could still be a caregiver. Plants and people could still depend on me. Over the next few months, I recovered from surgery and completed radiation and first round of chemotherapy. Even after I returned to work, I continued to care for the plant. Soon it had nearly doubled in height, and its leaves were shiny and lush. Both the tree and I were thriving. Then, mysteriously, it began to show signs of stress. I increased my watering, then decreased it. I nestled coffee grounds into the soil, a common fertilization method. I fed it commercial plant food. No matter what I did, its leaves kept browning and dropping to the floor. I grew more and more frustrated and uneasy. "I can't even care for a simple plant," I yelled. "I'm failing." Hannah reminded me that we'd seen houseplants die before. She asked me why I was getting so worked up about this particular one. "If my lucky bamboo dies," I blurted, "I might die." I couldn't shake the feeling that the plant had become a symbol of my own precarious health. Identifying with the green and growing plant had offered me solace. Now that the tree was struggling, I felt increasingly fearful. Its shriveling leaves, I worried, might signal the reoccurrence of my brain tumor. I realized I had wrongly connected my careful nurturing to the plant, something over which I had at least some control, with my own survival, something over which I had no control. When my tumor inevitably returned, it would not be because of any failure on my part, not because I ate sugar occasionally, and certainly not because I failed to keep this plant alive. As my anxiety lessened, I began to pore over online tutorials to help me figure out how to care for my ailing plant. Following the instructions, I transplanted the tree to a larger pot, untangling its roots to give it room to grow. And when it was back in the sunny window, we both began to thrive again. Whenever I look at that tree with its braided stalk and its new pod, I make a point to think of Mitch and the other people who have cared for and supported me. If the plant outlives me, I hope it will comfort Hannah and remind her that our large community will continue to nurture her after I am gone. Now that's a horse of a different color. Some of the newest additions to the official Scrabble dictionary might have you scratching your head. Dumpster, a large container of trash. Until recently, the term was trademarked. Embiggen, to enlarge. The variants embiggened and embiggening are also acceptable. Verbing, to use as a verb. That's right. The word verb is now itself a verb. Zonky, a hybrid between a zebra and a donkey. It's also called a z-donk, which you may also play. Ooh, z's always get high marks. Quotable quotes. If you're happy, you're wealthy. If rich humans could buy happiness, they would. Naomi Osaka, tennis player. Nothing in the future exists yet, but anything is possible right now, including the thing you think you cannot do. Laura McCowan, author in the book We Are the Luckiest, The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life. Capitalism isn't just everybody could make as much money as they can. Capitalism is about finding solutions to problems. Mark Cuban, entrepreneur. When you reach for your phone first thing in the morning, it's like having 100 people in your bedroom screaming at you. Robin Roberts, news anchor on ABC. If you build castles, everyone it approaches is an enemy. But if you're among the people, everybody's an ally. Jonathan Majors, an actor in Men's Health. Word power. Let's do something we haven't done for a while. Let's do the word power where you check the answers and see if you've got them right. Roses are red, violets are blue. This quiz is on poetry. How will you do? Poem's not your thing? Don't get stressed. Choose the answer that fits the word best. After you make your selections with care, go to the next page. The answers are there, and actually I have the answers right here. Troubadour. Ode to a king, a poet, musician, or a French verse form. A troubadour is a poet-musician. A modern-day troubadour, Bob Dylan, has penned more than 600 songs. Allusion, a brief reference, dream world, or man theme. Allusion is a brief reference. After the CEO's allusion to the Titanic in her quarterly update, the company's stock plunged. Refrain, that's an introduction, a repeated phrase, or a conclusion. It's a repeated phrase. The raven uttered its eerie refrain, nevermore. Idyllic, exaggerated, perfect, or picturesque. Idyllic is picturesque. Gwendolyn rented an idyllic lakeside cabin for the weekend. Metaphor, bragging chant, word order, or direct comparison? Direct comparison. All the world's a stage is one of Shakespeare's most famous metaphors. Muse. Final stanza, source of inspiration, or an anonymous author? It's a source of inspiration. My beloved poodle was the muse for my latest short story. Caesura. And that's C-E-A-S-U-R-A. Caesura. Pause, a lullaby, or near rhyme? It's a pause. So we take a brief caesura before dessert? Personify. Narrate, compliment, present as human. Present as a human. Some people personify their cars by giving them their names. Madrigal. Short medieval poem, man theme, or anthropology? A madrigal is a short medieval poem. The bard composed a madrigal about the beautiful Lady Rosalind. Canon. A literary prize, inkwell, body of work, or a big gun? It's a body of work. Maya Angelou's canon includes not just poems, but also autobiographies and screenplays. Onomatopoeia. That's O-N-O-M-A-T-O-P-O-I-E-I-A. It's a noun. It's a line break, a world that echoes sound, an ancient Greek drama. Actually, it's a record that echoes sound. Comic birds often use onomatopoeia with words like pow, punctuating the action. Canto. Poem selection, courtly love, or illustrated manuscript. It's a poem section. The last few cantos of Dante's Inferno take readers to the ninth circle of hell. Lyric. Mournful, song-like, flowery. That's song-like. This novel features lyric prose, an inventive plot, and memorable characters, the critic raved. Quatrain. Four-line poem. Stressed syllable. Untitled work. It's a four-line poem. Mrs. Fox students wrote quatrains for homework. Cadence. Dedication, public reading, or rhythm pattern. Rhythmic pattern. The cadence is a rhythmic pattern. The cadence of the keynote speaker's voice lulled me to sleep. The last word. Poets frequently ponder death. Some even write their own epitaphs. Emily Dickinson's reads simply, called back. Dorothy Parker's ashes were buried under an epitaph she once jokingly tossed off in a Vanity Fair. Excuse my dust. And Conrad Aiken's final resting place has multiple inscriptions. Its bench shape speaks loudest. According to legend, he hoped well-wishers would sit and enjoy a drink in his honor. Okay, last couple of weeks we've done a filler here, and we have to because we don't have enough information for the regular Reader's Digest, on what Reader's Digest set out as interesting facts. And we have been doing the weird stuff in each state. And we left off with Kansas, the world's largest ball of twine. Check seeking the world's largest ball of twine off your lift with a stop in Cawker City, Kansas. This 19,000-pound ball with more than 8 million feet of twine uses only sisal twine, typically used to hold together bales of hay. A local farmer created the ball in 1953 as a way to use his extra twine. And today's visitors can add to the ball with provided pre-weighed twine behind this attraction along Highway 24. In Kentucky, it's the Big Bone Lick Museum. Big Bone Lick State Historic Park in Union, Kentucky, was once covered in swamps, which attracted ancient animals including bison, giant mammoths, and mastodons. Bones of these animals were well preserved, and visitors can now see them at the museum on the grounds, as well as life-size replicas of the historic creatures. Louisiana. Mardi Gras World. The Mardi Gras World in New Orleans gives visitors an inside look at what it takes to put on a massive festival of Mardi Gras. The tour includes a visit through Blaine Kern Studios, an operating workshop that has been creating Mardi Gras parade floats since 1947. Be sure to bring your phone for plenty of selfie opportunities in front of floats, even wearing a Mardi Gras costume. And Maine has a Paul Bunyan statue. Once the lumber capital of the world, Bangor is home to a statue of one of the most famous lumberjacks, Paul Bunyan. The 31-foot tall statue on the city's main street may be the largest Bunyan in the world. The statue even made a cameo in Stephen King's novel It when it came to life. Speaking of things that seem to chill up your spine, don't miss the creepiest urban legend, and we might look at those later. Maryland is the War Correspondents' Arch. If you're hiking the Appalachian Trail through Maryland, you can't miss the imposing War Correspondents' Arch, a National Historic Monument built in 1896. The 50-foot-tall arch is located in Gatlin State Park in Burkittsville, which was once the former home of a Civil War journalist, and it serves as the only memorial in the world dedicated to journalists who have died while covering a war. There's been a bunch of them. Massachusetts has a Moby Dick statue. The statue of Moby Dick, created by artist Donna Darson, is a nod to the city whaling history and part of the Massachusetts Whale Trail, which links nearly 40 museums, attractions, whale-watching excursions, historic sites, and tours. You'll find the sculpture on MacArthur Drive near the Cudahunk Ferry in New Bedford. The Michigan has a giant uniroyal tire. It's only fitting to see a gigantic tire in the Motor City. The 8-story giant uniroyal tire is a long-time landmark and sits in the city's Allen Park near Detroit Metropolitan Airport. It was originally designed in the 1960s to be a Ferris wheel attraction for the New World's Fair. Check out. And Minnesota, of course, has the Jolly Green Giant statue. One of the many claims to fame for the town of Blue Earth is the world's largest statue of the Jolly Green Giant, which welcomes visitors to town and stands at 55.5 feet tall, although the town also claims it's the birthplace of the ice cream sandwich. While visiting the Don't Miss the Giant Museum, filled with Jolly Green Giant and Little Green Sprout memorials. In Mississippi, it's the Elvis Presley statue. When visiting the hometown of Elvis Presley in Tupelo, make time to stop at the Elvis Presley Homecoming statue, which commemorates a 1950s homecoming project concert he performed at the Tupelo Fairgrounds, located in downtown Fair Park District. The statue is situated in front of City Hall and the former site of the fairgrounds. In Missouri, there's a rocker, a red rocker. Right along the famous Route 66 in Cuba, you'll find a giant rocking chair, which held the title of the world's largest rocking chair until a larger one was built in 2015. The red rocker is just more than 2 feet tall. Montana Garden of 1,000 Buddhas. Located on the land of the Flathead Reservation in Arleigh, Garden of 1,000 Buddhas was designed to inspire and bring positive transformation to those who visit. Created through the visionary guidance of an incarnate Tibetan Buddhist monk, Lama, the site features 1,000 hand-cast Buddha statues around a central figure representing a perfect wisdom, along with native trees and flowers. Arleigh is also the site of a center to Tibetan Buddhist studies. You wouldn't think that would happen there. And in Nebraska, there's the famous Carhenge. Picture Stonehenge, but made from old cars instead of ancient stones. And you've got the idea of Carhenge, located just outside of Elansis, Nebraska on Highway 87. The structure was built by Jim Reinders in 1987, featuring mostly 1950s and 1960s automobiles. It's painted gray and has all 38 stones to replicate Stonehenge. Stop at the Pitstop Gift Shop, open during the summer months, for a souvenir of your visit. And in Nevada, the International Car Forest of the Last Church. At this unusual art installation outside Goldville, Nevada, off U.S. 95, artists use cars as canvases. With more than 40 cars, it's believed to be the largest outdoor car exhibit in the country. And there are some wild paintings on these cars, and there's an old truck and a big old limousine and a big old airport car bus, if you remember those from the years ago. In New Hampshire, it's Clark's Trading Post. Founded in 1928, Clark's Trading Post near Echo Lake in Franconia Notch State Park in the White Mountains is a family amusement park known for its live train bearers. They also offer steam train rides, a Segway park, water rides, and lots of other activities for the perfect road stop. Okay, we're switching over to Consumer Reports now. Last week we were doing Protect Your Home Inside and Out, and we left off with Are You Insured Enough? If you have an insurance policy, you know you're typically protected if a tree crashes through your roof or a thief makes off with your stuff. But 64% of homeowners are underinsured by an average of 27% of their home's value. That can lead to a nasty surprise if you file a claim. Considering these points to assess your coverage, and renters take note, your landlord does not insure possessions. That responsibility is on you. How much does your policy actually cover? Do some research on what might cost to repair, replace, repair, or rebuild if you endured a loss. Search online for local construction costs to see if you have correctly accounted for your home's total value. Also, check the Coverage A section of your policy, says Insurance Information Institute spokesperson Janice Ruiz, to see whether exterior structures are covered. If a hurricane leveled your tool shed, do you have to pay for repairs out of a pocket? Are you covered for replacement value or actual value? Let's say you installed a new washer and dryer 10 years ago for $1,500. If you are insured for replacement cost, you'll get an amount of money deemed appropriate in today's market to buy new, similar units. If you're insured for actual value, depreciation is factored in. So if the units are only worth $300 now, you would receive only $300 for your loss. Replacement value plans are likely to cost more, but actually they may be worth it. What about possessions? Many people obtain more valuable items like artwork and jewelry as time passes, Ruiz says. You can get a specific schedule policy for each item, which often requires appraisal. Or it may be easier and more cost-effective to get blanket coverage of, say, $55,000, up to $5,000 per item. Whichever you choose, make a video of your items of value so you can prove what you had in case of loss. Do you have flood insurance? This is usually not part of your homeowner's or renter's policy. If you have a mortgage on a home or flood zone, your bank may require flood insurance. If that's not the case, you might want to consider a policy. Climate change is triggering a surge of flood risk across America, with losses projected to increase 26% over the next 3 decades. Just because your area hasn't flooded yet doesn't mean it won't. Do you have sewer and water pipe coverage? Typically, this coverage for damage from backed-up pipes is not part of a homeowner's or renter's policy. It's an add-on or endorsement and may be worthwhile for peace of mind. What about hail and wind? This is typically covered by your policy, but check the amount of the deductible. Between 2000 and 2019, wind and hail damage was the leading cause of homeowners' insurance losses. I know my son-in-law in Texas had his car very seriously damaged by hail. Is there coverage for additional living expenses? If your home suffered a fire, you might need to move to a rental for a while. Would your policy cover that cost? What about replacing your ruined clothes? What about umbrella policies? These provide additional coverage if you're sued, say, because someone is injured on your property. You need another cover assets that are at risk. Ruhr says that from $2 million to $5 million and up in coverage is not uncommon. Will your insurer pay if you make a claim? Know this number. 100% of covered losses get paid to policy limits. So if your home is robbed and you have a coverage up to $10,000, that claim will be paid. But if $50,000 worth of good are stolen, you will still only get $10,000. That's why it's key to know the coverage detail and the amounts. Three ways to reduce your premiums. It goes without saying that if you want to be adequately insured in case of a home burglary or a fire, but you don't want to overpay, especially in these inflationary times, here are three tips from the Insurance Information Institute's Janice Ruiz. Get the right devices. Installing these protective systems can lead to lower premiums depending on your particular situation and whether you add, say, a smart lock, a burglar alarm, a fully monitored security system. For example, Allstate offers up to 5% savings if you install a Canary security system, HIPPO up to 13% if you have a system that includes professional monitoring. Also, some insurance companies now partner with security system providers, which can make the process of selecting and installing a system simpler. For instance, State Farm and ADT have paired up as has Selective and Simple Safe. Bundle for savings. By getting your home and auto insurance from one provider, your cost may be lower than the price of separate premiums. At Progressive, you could save over 20% on average by bundling. Nationwide offers savings of up to 20%. And try for discounts. An array of perks may be available based on your behavior, such as loyalty rewards for sticking with an insurer for years, savings for having a claim-free record, discounts for going paperless, and price breaks for seniors, veterans, and others. Check with your current or prospective insurers to see what is available. Now, here are a list of common homeowners insurance, and this is based on experience from a reader survey. And let me warn you that a couple of these are kind of restricted to certain people. But anyway, the first one is the USAA, which is only available to military and former military people. That got the highest score and perfect all the way aboard across in claims, premium, service, advice, and help, coverage, policy review, and policy clarity. NJM, which I'm not sure what that stands for, got almost as high a rating and only has slightly lower rating in claims, advice, and help, and coverage. Amica was another top rated. It got basically the same rating as NJM with slightly different results across the board. Then Erie got a 79 on a scale of 100. By the way, USAA got a 92. Erie got a 79. The Cincinnati got a 72. Auto Owners got a 69. Farm Bureau Property and Casualty got a 65. Chubb INA got 64. And Country Financial and Property Casualty got 61. The following did not do very well. Auto Club Enterprises 59, State Farm 58, American Family 57, Auto Club 55, CSAA Insurance 55, Hanover Insurance Group Property and Casualty got a 55, State Auto got a 53, Travelers got a 52, Farmers got a 51, Nationwide got a 48, Hartford got a 45, Allstate got a 45, Liberty Mutual got a 44, Tower Hill Group got a 36, and Universal Property and Casualty got the absolute low. They only got a 20. And the reason is that all they got the worst. I mean, we're talking, these things are color-coded. And those last ones that I read from Auto Club on down all got yellow almost all through their thing, which is not good at all. Not bad, but not good. Okay, the following article is for those of us who do not have an Italian grandmother who's willing to spend several hours in front of the stove making Sunday gravy, which is pasta sauce. The best pasta sauce on store shelves. Can you get a delicious, healthy sauce from a jar? See which one tastes amazing and which ones are duds, according to our test. It's no wonder jarred pasta sauce is incredibly popular, with multiple shelves in most grocery stores packed with this pantry staple. That's partly because tomato sauce is used in such a wide variety of ways, to top pasta, of course, but also on pizzas and seafood and in dishes such as lasagna and chicken parmesan. And these days, you can find store-bought options to match an assortment of tasty preferences, from garlicky to spicy to those that highlight herbs like basil. Many are nearly as flavorful as homemade, but without the work involved in chopping, mixing, and simmering for hours. To help consumers find tasty and healthy options, CR tested 41 store-bought tomato sauces, 32 marinaras, and 9 tomato basil sauces. Overall ratings are based 60% on nutrition and 40% on taste. We found plenty that are both delicious and good for you in range of prices. 17 sauces got top marks for both taste and nutrition and are recommended, says Amy Keating, registered dietitian and Consumer Reports nutrition, who led the thing. And there's a whole bunch of jars stacked here, anywhere from Silver Palette low-sodium marinara to San Marzano marinara and Wellesley Farms. I mean, there's a ton of them here. Anyway, a healthy convenience food. As a general rule, nutrition experts recommend limiting packaged and processed food as much as possible. But jarred tomato sauces are a notable exception. Like homemade sauces, they're typically full of healthy ingredients, and few that are artificial. An excellent pasta sauce will rely on a short list of quality real food ingredients, says Whitney Lizemeyer, Ph.D., a registered dietitian, and a sister profession of nutrition and dietetics at St. Louis University. Tomatoes should be the first ingredient listed, meaning the sauce is mostly made of tomatoes, followed by ingredients that add flavor, such as olive oil, garlic, onions, and spices. And the cooked tomatoes in these sauces can offer big health benefits. A serving of marinara, a half cup, absolutely counts as a vegetable serving, says Linsemeyer, adding the tomatoes are rich in vitamin C, potassium, and vitamin K, and folate. Tomato sauce is also one of the best sources of lycopene, a potent antioxidant that may help reduce the risk of heart disease and certain cancers. Sauce, in fact, is likely to have far more lycopene than the fresh tomato slices that are in your sandwich, because cooking breaks down a tomato's cellular structure, releasing more of the nutrients. That's interesting. Fats, sugars, and salt. The 41 sauces we tested had little or no saturated fat. We found that even the sauce with the highest overall fat content, Fodi Easy to Digest, Easy to Love Marinara, 13 grams per half cup of serving, has just 2 grams of saturated fat. The rest comes from the heart-healthy fats and olive oil. Some tomato sauces do contain added sugars, but in small amounts. In fact, you have to drop down to number 24 in our ratings, Bertelli, Tomato, and Basil, to find a version with added sugars, and that one just has 2 grams, or half a teaspoon, per serving. For comparison, the American Heart Association advises that women consume no more than 25 grams, 6 teaspoons, of added sugars per day, and men no more than 36 grams, or 9 teaspoons. Sodium is the main thing you have to be sure to check, Keating says. 15 of the sauces, including Ragu Simply Chucky Marinara, Good & Gather, Target, Organic Marinara, and Prego Traditional, contain 460 milligrams or more per half cup. That's at least 20% of the daily limit of 2,300 milligrams, Linsemeyer says. So if you pick a higher sodium sauce, you want to be conscious of how much sodium you're eating in other foods. Our 17 recommended sauces offer both a good balance of flavors and a reasonable amount of sodium. Those toward the top of our ratings have about 300 milligrams of sodium, or less per half cup serving. Our top two picks, the Silver Palette Low Sodium Marinara, 140 grams of sodium per serving, and Victoria Low Sodium Marinara, 120 grams, are low in sodium and have no added sugars. What makes a sauce taste great? While individual preferences vary, a few factors can make the difference between a mediocre sauce and a truly delicious one. A great-tasting sauce will have a bolder, fresher tomato taste and fresh-tasting, well-balanced seasoning, Keating says. No one ingredient, says a huge amount of garlic or an overabundance of basil, should overpower the others. The most flavorful sauces in our test were made primarily with whole tomatoes. Whole tomatoes simply taste better and give the sauce a tangy, bright tomato flavor, Keating says. Brands with tomato puree or tomato paste as the main ingredient tended to score lower for our taste. For example, Prego Traditional and Ragu Old World Style Traditional were sweeter, with less fresh tomato flavor than those made with whole tomatoes. Sauces that contain dried or dehydrated spices and seasoning instead of fresh also rank lower. Tried spices can be harsher or bitter. If they were in Great Value, Walmart, organic tomato basil, and Simply Nature from Aldi, organic tomato and basil, Keating says. Price does matter. Our prices of our tested sauce vary widely, from 30 cents to a bit more than $2 per half-cup serving. Generally, we found that the higher the price, the better the sauce. Most of our recommended picks cost between 94 cents and $1.50 per serving, with Hoboken Farms Basil Marinara at $2.202 a serving. Mente Bene Tomato Basil at 94 cents a serving was the lowest price recommended sauce. It's possible to send less and get a decent sauce. Several store brands included Wellesley Farm from BJ's, Italian-style marinara, and a private selection from Kroger Heirloom Marinara fared quite well on our taste testing, but they were high in sodium, with 420 and 500 milligrams per serving, respectively. Great Value from Walmart Marinara, to not just 30 cents per serving, also got good marks for its smooth texture and blend of flavors, though it does contain 400 milligrams of sodium per serving. But other lower-priced sauces, such as Hunt's Traditional and Simply Nature Aldi Organic Tomato Base, simply weren't as tasty. Pick your perfect pasta to go with your sauce. Here wants you to pair your sauce with a good pasta, notably one with a pleasant texture. Pleasing texture. We did an informal taste test of three popular brands of spaghetti, using the same amount of cooking water and salt for each and preparing them al dente according to package direction. Naturally, the three pastas were nearly identical, but they did vary in price, with Ronzoni at $2 per pound, Barilla at $2.50 per pound, and DiCecco at $3 per pound. And our testers noted subtle difference in the flavor and texture. Now, I've seen Ronzoni and Barilla. I've never seen DiCecco, which is D-E-C-E-C-C-O. Ronzoni Spaghetti Number 8. This pasta had less grain flavor than the others two we tasted. It was also a little less dense, so if you prefer a softer pasta rather than a chewy one, this is a good pick for you. Barilla Spaghetti Rigatoni. Barilla's pasta is made from a combination of durum wheat and flour, wheat flour and semolina, a la coarse ground of durum wheat, making it a good choice for those who like their pasta with a bit more bite. And DiCecco Spaghetti Number 12. These slightly thicker noodles had a noticeable heft compared with the other brands. They're made with only semolina, which may give the pasta its denser, chewier texture. What's the sauce for you? How do you know which pasta sauce will suit your particular palate? Scan this list of top picks for the flavors and sauce you prefer. If you want a sauce that's most like homemade, think your grandma. This sauce is the Rao's Homemade, scored a 72 at $1.58 per half-cup serving. This sauce has a fresh, rich taste and a near-perfect blend of tomatoes, garlic, basil, and other flavors. The only reason it's not in our top 10, it's ranked 11th, is because its sodium content, 420 milligrams per serving. Another option with great homemade flavor but less sodium, 300 milligrams per serving, is Hoboken Farms Basil Marinara, Overskull 71, price per serving $2. If you love basil, Mente Bene Basil, scored to 72 at 94 cents per half-cup serving. This sixth sauce is 12th overall in our ratings, but is the one the testers called out for its fresh basil notes. Another option with big basil flavor, Michael's of Brooklyn Fresh Tomato and Basil, overall score 71, price per serving $1.51. And if you like a garlicky sauce, Lydia's Marinara at $1.32 per half-cup serving scored a 75. A slightly thinner sauce than many of those others we tested, this one brings robust fresh garlic taste and a kick of red pepper. Another option, Cucina Antica Garlic Marinara overall score was 77, price for serving $1.43. Also serves up a fresh garlic flavor. If you're trying to cut back on sodium, The Silver Palette low-sodium marinara at $1.70 per half-cup serving scored an 81. One of our highest-ranking sauces has just 140 milligrams of sodium per serving and a big fresh tomato taste and fresh garlic flavor. Another option is Victoria low-sodium marinara over Scala 81, priced for serving $1.43. It has just 120 milligrams of sodium per serving, make it the lowest sodium sauce among our recommended picks. If onion and garlic are tough on your stomach, Organic Bello Delicate Recipe Organic Pasta Sauce at $1.38 per half-cup serving scored an 80. This somewhat thin, mild flavor sauce with a hint of fresh basil and black pepper is a great choice for those who have difficulty digesting onion and garlic, often added to tomato sauces. Rao's Homemade Sensitive Marinara, overall score 74, priced per serving $1.58, is also garlic and onion-free, but higher in sodium at 300 milligrams per serving versus 130 in the Organic Bello. And the pasta sauces that got the highest rating are the Silver Palette Low Sodium Marinara and the Victoria Low Sodium Marinara. Organic Bello, Chuchaquina Antica, Organic Bello Organic Marinara, Lydia's Marinara, Ray's Homemade Sensitive Marinara, Yo Mama's Food, Wesley's Farms from BJ's Italian Style Marinara, the Silver Palette San Marzano Marinara, Rao's Homemade Marinara, Monte Beno Tomato Basil, Barilla Vero Gusto Tomato Basil, Carbone Marinero, Hoboken Farms Basil Marinero, Michaels of Brooklyn's Fresh Tomato Basil, and Good and Gather from Target Signature Marinero, all scored in the 70s and were recommended. Now, there are a lot of others, and I'm going to run the names down, but the ratings are still pretty good for these. Victoria White Linen Marinero, Victoria Marinero, Fodi Easy to Digest to Love Marinero, Private Selection Kroger Heirloom Marinara, Newman's Own Organic Tomato and Basil, Great Value from Walmart Marinara, Bertolli Tomato and Basil, 365 Whole Foods Market Organic Marinara, Muir Glen Organic Tomato Basil, Classico Tomato and Basil, Newman's Own Marinara, all those scored in the 60s. In the 50s are Trader Joe's Organic Marinara Sauce, Barilla Marinara, Francisco Rinaldi Original Recipe, No Salt Added, Ragu Simply Chucky Marinara, which got a kind of a poor rating, Ragu Old World Style Traditional, Good and Gather from Target, Organic Marinara, Great Value from Walmart, Organic Tomato Basil, Classico Family Favorites Traditional, Prego Lower Sodium Traditional, Francisco Rinaldi, Original Recipe, Prego Traditional, going to got a 46. And Simply Nature from Aldi, Organic Tomato and Basil, got a 46. Hunt's Traditional, got a 39. Jazz up your jarred sauce. While many of the sauces we tested are delicious as is, you can easily add more flavor if you like. In not much more time than it takes to heat a jarred sauce, you can create some really special flavors, says Celine Beekman, Director of Nutrition at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York City. Here are some of her favorite hacks. Enhance the texture. Save a little of the starchy water your pasta was cooked in and mix it into your sauce. The liquid will release its starch molecules and add to body and creaminess. Repurpose leftovers. In a skillet, heat cooked ground meat, pork or chicken, or fresh cooked mushrooms or other veggies in olive oil, then stir into your sauce. And you can boost the flavors with wine. That sounds like fun. Saute garlic and onions, add 1/4 cup of wine, cook for up to 4 minutes, then add to the sauce. Or combine sauce with a cooked-down mixture of vodka, cream, and red pepper flakes for a spicy vodka version. Spice it up. Stir fresh herbs, such as basil, into your sauce as you heat it up. If you only have dried spices, saute them in olive oil for 30 seconds to enhance their flavor. Then add them to your sauce. Testing for toxins. Ever wonder about harmful chemicals that might lurk in everyday products? These three people, none of them trained scientists, decided to find out. Here's how they did it. You may have heard of Aaron Brockovich, a law clerk without a science degree who exposed the existence of dangerous contaminant polluting town's groundwater, a toxic hazard that otherwise might have stayed invisible. She's not the first person to practice citizen science, to powerful effect, nor will she be the last. Maybe you've wondered whether the plastic container you're about to zap in a microwave is really safe to use, or whether your favorite chipped coffee mug is exposing you to toxic paint. Some particularly interesting people who've had similar concerns have also wondered, then took the extra step of testing the chemical makeup of the things they were concerned about, and then publicized the results. These citizen tests aren't professional chemists or government regulators, but all of them were able to raise red flags and spark important conversations about the hidden health hazards that could be hiding in our homes and lives. The lead tester, Tamara Rubin, makes toxin testing into her own hands, literally. The Portland, Oregon mother of four is trained and certified to use professional-grade lead testing gun that can detect the presence of lead in just about any consumer product. So far, Rubin says she has tested for and written about lead in thousands of everyday objects, and she works to raise awareness about the dangers of lead poisoning, a problem that often starts in the home. Rubin was driven to do this work after her sons, one then three-year-olds and the other an infant, became ill soon after the removal of lead paint in her home. Blood tests later showed that she and they had high lead levels, she said, and her children are now battling lasting health impacts, including learning disabilities. Excuse me, I need to turn the page here. At first, to educate herself, Rubin interviewed lead experts and academics. Then she started posting on Facebook and created a blog, Lead Safe Mama, to save what she learned. For years, she's made herself available to parents who learn that their children have high levels of lead in their blood and don't know what to do next. Her experience taught her, she says, that there's a need to be available to families in crises. The year 2009 was a game changer for her. That's when a manufacturer of professional X-ray fluorescence, XRF, lead tasting gun loaned her the tool, and she began zapping products in her home, then her friends' homes, then in the homes of her big readers. She looked at pottery, cookware, crystals, mugs, jewelry, and lots of dishes. Some of the red flags that Rubin's work has raised have been echoed in later tests from manufacturers or other researchers. In 2017, for example, after she says she's detected lead in popular fidget spinners, the consumer advocacy group USPRIG also tested fidget spinners and campaigned to stop their sale. Last November, the manufacturer of a stainless steel water bottle for kids recalled thousands of bottles and cups after she reported finding lead in them. Rubin says that many people mistakenly believe that the problem of lead in consumer products was solved long ago. But in fact, lead remains a risk for millions of Americans, with the heavy metal found in paint and plumbing of many old homes and buildings, and in some consumer products, too. Her work's larger goal, she says, is to raise awareness. Once there's a way into people's lives, she said, get them to see that lead poisoning could be their problem, then they're more likely to get their kids and themselves tested. The underwear tester. When freelancer Jessica Choi, based in San Francisco, took over the Miss Green Club column for Sierra Club magazine in 2019, one of the first reader questions she chose to answer was which menstrual products were most eco-friendly. In particular, she wanted to know whether period underwear, washable, reusable underwear meant to replace pads, had significant downsides compared with disposable products. Choi knew that waterproof products often contain PFAS, a group of chemicals linked to certain cancers and other health problems. She was also aware that companies don't always know exactly what's in their products. So when she contacted sick manufacturers of period underwear, she was prepared to be skeptical if they claimed that they were totally safe and sustainable. But only one responded to her at all. So Choi decided to get the products tested herself. She sent samples of two brands to a lab at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana, run by Graham Peasley, Ph.D., a leading PFAS researcher. Some labs test only for a handful of PFAS, but over 12,000 of the chemicals exist, which is one reason why Peasley measures fluorine, an indicator for PFAS overall. The results were startling, Peasley says. While fluorine was not detected in one product, and the other levels were surprisingly high, he says. When Choi wrote about it in her column, she says her readers were shocked. People were really concerned because, you know, where do you wear underwear but one of the most sensitive parts of your body? And because fluorine levels were not detected in one of the tested brands, Chloe felt it okay to recommend it to her readers. The PFAS hunter. One reader of the Miss Green column happened to be Leah Sergidi, who lives in Los Angeles and writes a Mamavation, a blog about how to avoid toxins in the home. Sergidi says she was a Nancy Drew type as a child, curious and relentless, and grew concerned about the environmental toxins after several family members died of cancer. Knowing that PFAS is in many products, Sergidi followed up where Choi left off. She has now sent more than 450 products in multiple categories to a lab for testing, including cooking oil, dental floss, tomato sauce, ketchups, parchment paper, yoga pants, sports bras, bamboo flooring, and toothpaste. She laughs when she imagined lab assistants receiving yet another pallet of toilet paper from her. The testing isn't cheap. She has spent about $75,000 on the work so far, and though she has offset that cost with reader donations and sponsorship from nonprofit publication Environmental Health News, but she says, to be honest, I'm such a pain in the butt that I would do this regardless. Sergi says that many of her readers are mothers who are often the decision-makers of the household. These women tend to care for and feed their families. They don't have the information they need, Sergi says. No one is answering my questions quick enough, she says, so I just had to go and figure it out. And God bless those labs that can handle me. Sergi is quick to admit that she doesn't have a scientific background, but she has a lot of experts helping her translate lab results into plain English and vetting her write-ups. One is Terrence Collins, Ph.D., a professor of chemistry at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and the director of the Institute for Green Science. Leo and her work are important, even critical elements of addressing the massive unsustainability of how many everyday products are made, Collins says. He also has thoughts about critics of people like Sejdi, who decide to take testing into their own hands. There's so much work to be done to combat toxic contaminants that the more people who get involved, the better, he says. People say, oh, you can't do that, you're not a scientist. But he says, that's nonsense. How you can take action. See whether you can run some tests from your own home. For instance, you can test for lead in paint using kits sold in hardware stores or online. In some cases, you may be able to send a sample of your tap water to your local health department to get tested for lead for free. You can also have water tested for certain PFAs through companies such as Simple Lab and WaterCheck, though it can cost $100 or more. Do some research. Is a local environmental group working on an issue you are concerned about? Have any local officials spoken about it? Is there an expert nearby who wants to help or an ongoing research project you can join by collecting data or volunteering time? CitizenScience.gov, a partnership of the U.S. General Service Administration and the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, is one place to start. Be a change agent. Talk to your neighbors about your concerns. Attend community boards or town council meetings to raise those issues. Find out who represents you in local government and tell them what matters to you and why, and what you think should be done to address the problem. As the Reese Citizen Tester stories demonstrate, a little curiosity and persistence can go a very long way. And it's a CR tradition. Consumer Reports has a long history of asking citizen volunteers for help with our research. In 1959, we asked readers to send us milk from local groceries to track evidence of radiation from nuclear testing. More recently, we had readers bottle up samples of their tap water to measure PFAS contamination. To see how you can participate in current CR projects, go to cr.org/communityreports. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us, 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Croning, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.